And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that the show is available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app, or visit the website nickcraig.com and take the show with you on your own time. Happy Monday to you. Welcome into a President's Day edition. We'll dive into the history of President's Day. It's an interesting one coming up here in just a little bit this morning. Well, we start off in actually Germany this morning as Vice President J.D. Vance was in Europe in the latter half of last week and made and had some very strong statements and comments to pass along at the EU or at the European Munich Security Conference, which was taking place obviously in Germany. J.D. Vance, as you are, of course, well aware of, watching him through the presidential campaign after the RNC convention during the summer, Trump announces J.D. Vance as his running mate. J.D. Vance is a very strong presence. He's a younger guy. He's under 40, a freshman senator, and he is very strong in the things that he believes and that he feels. And the one thing, you know, that obviously one of the things we love about Trump is his no holds bar. I don't care if I hurt your feelings. I'm going to say what's on my mind. It's one of the things that makes Trump such a popular political figure. J.D. Vance has a lot of those same qualities. And I did genuinely, you know, kind of wonder early on with the J.D. Vance pick, would he clash too much with Trump? Right? We saw in 2016 with Mike Pence, it appeared that Trump, you know, picked a candidate in Mike Pence to, at the time, Trump had never been in office. There was a lot of question, a lot of concern. Is he capable? Can he deal with the, you know, being in this position that he's in? There was a lot of questions about that. And so the pick of Mike Pence at the time, I think, was a way in which he attempted to bring legitimacy, maybe that's not the right word to use, but bring some legitimacy to what he was trying to do. And, well, I've never been a politician, but here's a guy who has been in politics and can show me the ropes. But one of the big things with Mike Pence was that he was a pretty quiet guy. Now, things have changed since the first Trump administration has now been gone. But during the time, Mike Pence wasn't really speaking much in front of the cameras. He doesn't have that bombastic personality that somebody like J.D. Vance has. And one thing I can say pretty confidently about President Trump this morning, he loves being the center of attention. It's the Trump show. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory or a bad way, but when he is the man in charge, which he is for the next 4 years, he wants to be the center of the political conversation that goes on. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I was curious how the whole J.D. Vance thing would work with him. Again, because J.D. Vance is a very strong personality. He's not like a milquetoast guy that just kind of hangs out behind the scenes and, you know, does what he needs to do. He's very bombastic in what he says. And he absolutely teed off on Europe during the Munich Security Conference on Friday. This clip got a lot of play over the weekend. Maybe you saw it, maybe you didn't. Let's listen into a few minutes of J.D. Vance on his comments for Europe and some of their issues ongoing with censoring. Here's the vice president back a couple days ago.
And unfortunately, when I look at Europe today, it's sometimes not so clear what happened to some of the Cold War's winners. I look to Brussels, where EU commissars warn citizens that they intend to shut down social media during times of civil unrest the moment they spot what they've judged to be, quote, hateful content. Or to this very country, where police have carried out raids against citizens suspected of posting anti-feminist comments online as part of, quote, combating misogyny on the internet, a day of action. I look to Sweden, where 2 weeks ago the government convicted a Christian activist for participating in Quran burnings that resulted in his friend's murder. And as the judge in his case chillingly noted, Sweden's laws to supposedly protect free expression do not, in fact, grant, and I'm quoting, a free pass to do or say anything without risking offending the group that holds that belief.
And that's pretty concerning. But that's what's going on in Europe right now. Now, there's obviously a whole lot of censorship discussion here in the United States. There's a whole lot of question about the role that government does or does not play in regards to censorship. It's full-blown way worse over in Europe. And J.D. Vance is calling it out. And it's why the headline over at TheGuardian.com was very interesting. J.D. Vance stuns Munich conference with blistering attack on European leaders. And that's exactly what he did. More from the vice president.
And perhaps most concerningly, I look to our very dear friends, the United Kingdom, where the backslide away from conscience rights has placed the basic liberties of religious Britons in particular in the crosshairs. A little over 2 years ago, the British government charged Adam Smith Connor, a 51-year-old physiotherapist and an army veteran, with the heinous crime of standing 50 meters from an abortion clinic and silently praying for 3 minutes. Not obstructing anyone, not interacting with anyone, just silently praying on his own. And after British law enforcement spotted him and demanded to know what he was praying for, Adam replied simply, it was on behalf of the unborn son he and his former girlfriend had aborted years before. Now, the officers were not moved. Adam was found guilty of breaking the government's new buffer zones law, which criminalizes silent prayer and other actions that could influence a person's decision within 200 meters of an abortion facility. He was sentenced to pay thousands of pounds in legal costs to the prosecution. Now, I wish I could say that this was a fluke, a one-off crazy example of a badly written law being enacted against a single person. But no, this last October, just a few months ago, the Scottish government began distributing letters to citizens whose houses lay within so-called safe access zones, warning them that even private prayer within their own homes may amount to breaking the law. Naturally, the government urged readers to report any fellow citizens suspected guilty of thought crime. In Britain and across Europe, free speech, I fear, is in retreat.
Free speech, he fears, is in retreat. A very strong message there from J.D. Vance. A very powerful message from the vice president on a serious issue that we are dealing with worldwide. Obviously, you and I interact and feel and hear most of that in regards to the United States. When we're talking about censorship, the things that probably come to your mind are big tech, social media, where for years they used their unbelievable amount of power, their protection under Section 230, to absolutely hone in and attack conservative Republican viewpoints. Whether it was doing things like shadow banning, the idea that your social media profile essentially disappears. Yes, you can search it. Yes, you can still find it, but nobody sees your posts. This was very prominent on Facebook, very prominent on the former platform Twitter. You'd post something and you'd notice, well, hey, I have thousands of followers, yet nobody sees my posts. Nobody, I'm not getting any engagement on my content. Very common, very popular on platforms like YouTube as well, which happens to also be a Google product. Post a video that's a little controversial, it's shadow banned. Video's still there, but unless somebody is actively going and clicking the link to that video, they're not seeing it. It's not popping up in their feed. There's no organic traffic, which is how all of social media works. The bedrock of social media is organic traffic. You have individuals that like or follow your content, whether it's Facebook, YouTube, X, whatever. They presumably want to see that content. Right? If you subscribe to a YouTube channel, if you follow somebody on X, if you follow a page on Facebook, presumably you would want to see that content. And these social media companies, because they are in bed with the Democrats, in bed with big government, decided that they were going to take it upon themselves to determine whether you actually wanted to see that content or not. And their determination was pretty simple. If this conversation, if this viewpoint is counter to our big government, you know, New World Order approach to the way in which we want to govern the entire world, then we're going to make sure that that content does not get seen. We're going to make sure that that content is harder and harder to find. That the ability for organic search and the ability for organic viewership, we're going to make sure that that doesn't happen. That's what big tech did and, you know, has continued to do over the last couple of years. So that's the kind of censorship that you and I are familiar with. But the story that you just heard from Vice President J.D. Vance, what's going on in portions of the EU, European Union, various parts of Europe, this is kind of dystopian-like censorship. Arresting somebody in front of an abortion clinic, not for screaming at women going in there, not for, you know, threatening individuals' lives or making heinous threats against them for what they're about to do, but for simply standing there and praying. Even standing there with a sign. The idea that that paramounts to extreme violence that needs to be prosecuted in the court of law is completely absurd. The idea that that rises to such a level that police would arrest somebody over that is insane. And this is the unfortunate reality of these very much unfree societies like you see throughout portions of Europe. And J.D. Vance very clearly calls that out. Calls out Europe for being a bunch of tyrants, essentially criminalizing freedom of speech. A blistering message to individuals who need to hear it. And I don't think his comments were out of line. The things that he said weren't too bombastic or over the edge. Calling a spade a spade. And I don't know that there's anything wrong with that. This is the kind of global message that America is resonating. And it's a good message. It's a strong message. I don't know why we are at a point in time right now, a point in history, where we are drawing such stark lines in the sand over an issue like freedom of expression. Or in his later case in, was it Scotland he was talking about? Freedom of religion. I don't know how we've drifted so far where that's the conversation that's taking place, but it in fact is. That's what's actively going on right now. This is the active discussion that is taking place across the world. So you heard J.D. Vance's comments, at least part of it. His whole thing is about 19 minutes long. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. I'd encourage you to go listen to it. But in that almost 3 minutes that you just heard from J.D. Vance, it's a pretty strong message. So in response to that, Face the Nation, which is a show, one of the Sunday morning shows as it's known. You've got ABC's This Week. You've got CBS's Face the Nation. You've got NBC's Meet the Press. And then you have the Fox Sunday show that Fox News produces that airs on Fox broadcast station. So focusing on the big three Sunday morning shows, Face the Nation, This Week, and Meet the Press. These shows are the epitome of left-wing media. These shows and the narratives that come out of these programs are a joke. I mean, if you want to, you know, come up with the textbook definition of left-wing media, the textbook definition of the way in which Democrats operate the media establishment, those Sunday morning shows are the primo example of how they operate. They are the prime example of the bias and the absurdity that comes out of these media outlets. These are their flagship political programs that they produce for their, well, used to be millions of viewers a week. It's now hundreds of thousands as individuals at a pretty alarming rate for those media outlets have decided, now I'm going to turn this off. I'm going to find my content elsewhere. I don't really agree with the message that is being broadcast or the message that's being supported here, so I'm going to turn it off. So in response to J.D. Vance's speech in Munich, which you just heard in part of, specifically the censorship portion, because that's what this interview focuses on, I would like you to listen to Margaret Brennan, who hosts Face the Nation, and a conversation she had with Marco Rubio. It's a little disjointed. It's probably going to be hard for you to follow because it makes absolutely no sense. I've listened to it half a dozen times now, and I still don't have a good grasp of how she draws the lines that she does. So again, just to recap, J.D. Vance in Munich on Friday, talking about censorship and talking about freedom of speech. That was the premise of what you just heard from him. This is how CBS's Face the Nation summarizes J.D. Vance's comments and her question to Marco. It's not even a question. Her statement, her pontification to Marco Rubio is absurd. Take a listen to this.
Well, he was standing in a country where free speech was weaponized to conduct a genocide. And he met with the head of a political party that has far-right views and some historic ties to extreme groups. The context of that was changing the tone of it. And you know that the censorship
I have to disagree with you. Free speech was not used to conduct a genocide. The genocide was conducted by an authoritarian Nazi regime that happened to also be genocidal because they hated Jews and they hated minorities and they hated those that they had a list of people they hated, but primarily the Jews. There was no free speech in Nazi Germany. There was none. There was also no opposition in Nazi Germany. They were a sole and only party that governed that country. So that's not an accurate reflection of history. I also think
I'm going to stop Rubio right here. His comments are already phenomenal. So Margaret Brennan, CBS News, tries to equate what you just heard from J.D. Vance. I played his comments. CBS didn't because they're a bunch of left-wing Democrats that have no interest in fact, have no interest in the truth. They just want to push their agenda forward. Margaret Brennan is equating J.D. Vance's comments about the startling rise of suppression of speech to what went on in the 1940s with Nazi Germany. How she draws that comparison, how she can try to equate and even makes the absurd statement that freedom of speech is what led to the rise of Nazis? That freedom of speech is what led to the rise of the genocide of millions of people is not even close to an accurate portrayal of history. To say it's wrong is an understatement. It was the suppression of speech. You had the Nazi Party that went around their country and attempted to go around the rest of Europe and round people up that they disagreed with, people that they didn't like, people that they wanted to blame all of their woes on, and round them up and throw them in concentration camps. There was no freedom of speech. If you had that kind of speech, you were rounded up by the government and thrown away. So how she tries to draw a conclusion that it was freedom of speech that led to the rise of Nazi Germany, that it was freedom of speech that allowed genocide to take place, is absurd. And I'm glad Marco Rubio, I'm going to roll this back just a little bit, because Marco Rubio jumps in here and says, I have to completely disagree with your talking, what you're saying. Because it's not based in reality at all.
Specifically about the right.
No, I have to disagree with you. Free speech was not used to conduct a genocide. The genocide was conducted by an authoritarian Nazi regime that happened to also be genocidal because they hated Jews and they hated minorities and they hated those that they had a list of people they hated, but primarily the Jews. There was no free speech in Nazi Germany. There was none. There was also no opposition in Nazi Germany. They were a sole and only party that governed that country. So that's not an accurate reflection of history. I also think it's wrong. Again, I go back to the point of his speech. Okay, the point of his speech was basically that there is an erosion in free speech and intolerance for opposing points of view within Europe. And that's of concern because that is eroding. That's not an erosion of your military capabilities. That's not an erosion of your economic standing. That's an erosion of the actual values that bind us together in this transatlantic union that everybody talks about. And I think allies and friends and partners that have worked together now for 80 years should be able to speak frankly to one another in open forums. Without being offended, insulted, or upset. And I spoke to foreign ministers from multiple countries throughout Europe. Many of them probably didn't like the speech or didn't agree with it, but they were continuing to engage with us on all sorts of issues that unite us. So again, at the end of the day, I think that people give all, that is a form in which you're supposed to be inviting people to give speeches, not basically a chorus where everyone is saying the exact same thing. That's not always gonna be the case when it's a collection of democracies where leaders have the right and the privilege to speak their minds in forums such as these.
Well,
what an insane back and forth. I mean, what an absurd thing for not only a journalist to say. As I mentioned, that's why I gave a little bit of backstory on this. Face the Nation is CBS's premier news program. It airs once a week. Sunday morning, they're called the Sunday morning shows, and it is supposed to be this whole of a this whole encompassed political program. It, within 60 minutes, this deep dive with individuals like Marco Rubio and presidents and other major officials go on these Sunday morning shows. That's what this show is supposed to be. This isn't some rag program that CBS is running in the middle of the day or late at night. This is their prime time political show. And she blames the Holocaust on freedom of speech? It's beyond disingenuous, ladies and gentlemen. This is beyond just trying to spin something to your political narrative, your political agenda. This is full out. And this is a complete and total attempt to rewrite history. That's what this is. You can't listen to the comments from Margaret Brennan that she didn't just come up with out of the blue. These shows are not ad-libbed. There are producers that write the questions. These are very much staged shows. Now, the interviews, there's some back and forth and there's some ad-libbing. But she didn't just randomly concoct this idea in her head that somehow the Holocaust was a result of freedom of speech. She didn't just randomly pull that out of thin air as she was talking to Rubio. This was discussed with her producers. This was discussed with the team that puts that show on. And this is the way in which they wanted to go forward with their line of questioning. This is very intentional. And now we know that the mainstream media can be, and most of the time, is incredibly disingenuous with what they say and what they do. It's the way in which they try and hold on to the very small amount of viewers that they have left. It's their attempt to continue the reign of power that for a long period of time they had. I mean, you look at the scope of media and you can break it up into various sections. You go 20, 40, 60 years. You go back 60 years ago, and the three major networks, CBS, ABC, and NBC, they literally were the news. If they were reporting on something, it was the news. If they weren't reporting on something, you didn't know about it. It didn't exist. It, for all intents and purposes, it didn't happen. Now you go back 40 years ago to the 80s, and you've got things like talk radio's at a little bit of its infancy. You've got individuals in the later 80s like Rush Limbaugh that are coming onto the scene. You've got this information, this knowledge transfer, this information that is starting to be shared that is counter to what is being broadcast by the major networks. And then you go back 20 years ago to the early 2000s, and of course you've got the advent and the age of the internet, the information highway, in which, you know, 2005, not everybody had, you didn't have smartphones and things, but most people had a lot of people had computers. Folks had access to either dial-up internet or broadband internet from a cable company, and they were able to log on to the internet and read things. They could log on to websites and get their news, and it didn't have to just come from broadcast television. It did not just have to come from these three major networks that had monopolized the news industry for 100 years. Started on the radio and then transitioned into television with these major cornerstones of media controlling the narrative. And now we sit in 2025 and it's completely shattered. The grip that these entities have on the American people, the grip that these outlets have, the grip that these outlets have on the thoughts of the American people is completely evaporated. Their influence is almost unrecognizable to what it was even 25 or 30 years ago. You don't have to go back that far to understand and to see the influence that media had. Even in the early 2000s, before social media, what was broadcast on these networks for a large part was gospel. And yes, in the early 2000s, you had booming talk radio stations. Rush Limbaugh at the peak of his popularity, late 90s, early 2000s. So there was a counter message getting out there. But it was still these major television networks that controlled the narrative. Now, of course, we've talked about things like trust in American media that continues to pull at record all-time lows. Back a couple of weeks ago, we looked at some various ratings of networks. We looked at some of the viewership over at CNN, which is not broadcast news, but it is cable news, a major talking piece for the left. It's dwindling. I mean, you've got like reruns of Cops and Reno 911 and Seinfeld in The Office that are having more viewers than a CNN program. It's pretty abysmal what's going on over there. And it's even worse with these major networks like CBS, NBC, and ABC. Because their news products are atrocious right now. Their political lean, their political bias is so overwhelming that audiences are just turning it off. And after you heard that back and forth with Margaret Brennan and Secretary of State Marco Rubio, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? If you're an individual that has even a basic understanding of what's going on media-wise, what's going on in the world of news, if you even have the slightest understanding of that, watching a show like this on CBS or watching Meet the Press or This Week on ABC, whatever the program might be, it's impossible to get through. Because the things that they are talking about, you know damn well aren't true. The narratives that they are attempting to spin, even somebody with a basic education knows that the rise of Nazis in Germany and the Holocaust was anything but free speech. It was an overarching authoritarian government that round up their opposition and ship them off to concentration camps. How you can equate that to free speech on any level is absolutely insane. But that's what she did. This attempt from the media to demonize free speech should not be understated. So I'm gonna stop with the actual comments and you know the history of news and all that stuff. Let's go look at now what was actually said by Margaret Brennan. She is equating and blaming issues like the Holocaust on free speech. What does that tell you about the Democrats' mindset on freedom of expression? What does that tell you about the progressive left's thoughts on things like free speech? If they're willing to equate it to one of the worst atrocities that has ever happened in, you know, any, you know, record-keeping human history, things that we actually know that happened. If that's what they think about freedom of speech, that is incredibly, incredibly disturbing and incredibly a detrimental idea to hold in our country. Because the bedrock of our society is free expression. And now that doesn't allow you and that doesn't give you the right to go into a movie theater and yell fire. That's not freedom of speech. And also, freedom of speech does not protect you against me. Freedom of speech is between you and your government. This is very misunderstood about freedom of speech. This idea that, you know, two individuals interacting, there's some innate freedom of speech. There's not. Freedom of speech means the government protects you for your speech. The government does not go after you for the things that you say. That's freedom of speech. That's our system. And people over at CBS News, like Margaret Brennan, obviously believe that freedom of speech is one of the worst things that that the United States can have. She's equating it to one of the worst atrocities of all time. She's equating it to mass genocide. If that is not incredibly problematic or concerning for you, then you probably need to find something else to listen to besides this show. That is an insane analogy to draw. It is not based in fact. It is not based in reality. It's not based in history. It's based in nothing. Except the one thing it is based in is far left, progressive, liberal ideology. That's what it's based in. Marco Rubio, I think, did a phenomenal job clapping back at her. I think Marco Rubio really did a good job on pushing back and then pivoting to what the discussion actually is. But folks, I guess this is nothing new, because this is something that we have seen for almost a decade now in U.S. politics. The left is quick to demonize and call anybody that they disagree with, anybody that is counter to their wild, wacko, progressive leftist policies, they're ready to immediately call them Nazis and Hitler. Immediately. I mean, they've said it about Trump a gazillion times. They try to equate his supporters to the likes of the Nazi youth. I mean, it's disgusting what these individuals do, but it's not new. When they have nothing else to argue, when they can't argue or base anything on fact or merit, what do they immediately go to? Nazis. They immediately go to, again, one of the worst atrocities that has ever taken place. Because it sounds really bad. Because it immediately invokes some sort of disgusting, hateful response, as it should. So that's what they go to. It's a weak, cheap political argument that the left has absolutely absorbed as their, essentially, their attack going forward. In this battlefield, proverbial battlefield of politics, the left has invoked Nazis and Hitler as their enemy, as like their number one strategy, for whatever freaking reason. It's completely ineffective. It has been beaten like a dead horse, and it no longer means anything. The boy who cried wolf, you're familiar with this. Cried wolf too many times. There was no wolf. Then the one day there was a wolf. He cried wolf. Nobody took him seriously. Got eaten by the wolf, right? You're familiar with the boy who cried wolf. Well, that's what the media is And that's how the media operates in regards to their political opponents. It's constantly the boy who cried wolf. The world is coming to an end. It's the end of democracy. Trump is an authoritarian. Trump is Hitler. All of these things, you say it ad nauseum. For this case, almost a decade. 2015 is when Trump first announced, late 2015. You say this stuff for a decade and none of it comes to fruition. None of it's true. None of it's based in reality. The end result is people stop listening to it. People tune it out. They laugh because it's absurd. And you say the same thing over and over again, and it's not based in any sort of fact or reality. So I thought that was a very interesting clip. I thought J.D. Vance's comments were phenomenal. CBS News continues to plant their flag in the ground, showing how far left that they are, how out of touch they are with the American people in a disgusting, disgraceful attempt to try and rewrite history. And it's why, again, they continue to be so irrelevant in the national stage. It's why individuals are turning them off at a pretty record and rapid rate. We'll have the links to both of those up in the show notes, which you can find over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Get access to the daily show notes and more, including our monthly hangout chat, which will be happening next week. Make sure you check out the Patreon account to get a notification as to when that's taking place. Patreon.com/Nick Craig if you believe you're getting some value out of the show. $5, $10 a month if you believe you're getting some value. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. On the other side, we will get into the history of President's Day. Plus, we've got some local news, even though it is a chilly start to the day here this morning across southeastern North Carolina. We are almost into the busy beach season and some parking permits going on sale today. We'll have those details coming up as well. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show on a Monday morning, President's Day edition, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Well, it is a chilly start to the day and chilly conditions existing over the next couple of days. However, we are just 1 month away from the start of the paid parking season in a lot of our municipalities across southeastern North Carolina. We'll get into those details in the coming weeks. But Ocean Isle Beach is beginning their parking permit program today. To purchase a permit, you of course need to be a resident, and those go on sale at 8 a.m. this morning. Even though it is mid-February, temperatures in the 30s, their parking season starts April the 1st, runs April 1st to October the 31st. I just thought that was rather interesting. Obviously, this time of the year, temperatures tend to fluctuate a lot, but a chilly start to the day. Nevertheless, the paid parking permits go on sale in Ocean Isle Beach today. We'll do a deeper dive either later this week or early next into the entire paid parking season. Unfortunately, pricing is going up, squeezing locals out from going to local beaches. It is completely unaffordable. We'll dive into some of those details in the in a couple of weeks or later this week or early next. We'll dive into some of those details. However, it is President's Day, a federal holiday. The history of President's Day is pretty interesting. This is over at history.com. I always liked doing this on the radio, kind of going over the history of some of these days. So it started in 1800. So George Washington died in 1799. His birthday, February the 22nd, and that became a day of remembrance once he passed away in 1800. At the time, Washington was revered as one of the most important figures or the most important figure in American history. And then you had events as we went through the 1800s, the 1832 centennial of his birth and the construction of the Washington Monument in 1848. There was a lot of national celebration about that. People loved George Washington, rightfully so. And while Washington's birthday was an unofficial observance for most of the 1800s, around 1870, it became a federal holiday. Senator Stephen Wallace Dorsey of Arkansas was the first to propose the measure, and in 1879, President Rutherford B. Hayes signed it into law. So as we headed into the 1880s. The holiday only initially applied to the District of Columbia. However, in 1885, it was expanded to the entire country. And at that time, Washington's birthday joined only four other nationally recognized bank holidays, as they were known at the time: Christmas Day, New Year's Day, the 4th of July, and Thanksgiving. And to make it even more unique and interesting, it is, of course, the first to celebrate an individual, right? Individual life of an American. Christmas, yes, of course, the connection with Jesus, but this was an individual American. We had Christmas, New Year's, 4th of July, and Thanksgiving. The shift from Washington's birthday, however, to President's Day took place almost 100 years later, in the late 1960s, when Congress proposed a measure known as the Uniform Monday Holiday Act, which was championed by Senator Robert McClory out of Illinois. The law sought to shift the celebration of several federal holidays from specific dates to a series of predetermined Mondays. The proposed change was seen by many as a novel way to create more three-day weekends for the nation's workers, and it was believed to ensure that holidays always fell on the same weekday and would reduce employees essentially not acknowledging it. You had various employers that would say, well, you know, it's a random Wednesday, we're not giving you that day off. It was an attempt to uniform all of that. And while some argued that shifting the holidays from their original dates would cheapen their meaning, the bill had very much widespread support from both the private sector and labor unions as a surefire way to bolster retail sales, which, of course, is an important piece of the puzzle. The Uniform Monday Holiday Act also included a provision to combine the celebration of Washington's birthday with that of Abraham Lincoln, which happened to fall on February the 12th. Lincoln's birthday had long been a state holiday in places like Illinois, and many supported joining the 2 days as a way of giving equal recognition to two of America's most famous statesmen. Senator McClory was among the measure's major proponents and even floated the idea of renaming the holiday President's Day. However, this drew some serious criticism and contention from lawmakers from places like Virginia, which was the home state of George Washington. That proposal was dropped. Nevertheless, the main piece of the Uniform Monday Holiday Act passed in 1968 and officially took effect in 1971 following an executive order from President Richard Nixon. Washington's birthday was then shifted from the fixed date, his birthday, February the 22nd, to the third Monday in February. Columbus Day, Memorial Day, and Veterans Day were also moved from their traditional designated dates. However, Veterans Day was then switched back to November the 11th, where it should be, because of it needing to fall on the actual day. That happened in 1978. And while Nixon's order plainly called the newly placed holiday Washington's birthday, it was not long before the shift to President's Day began. The move away from February the 22nd led many to believe that the new date was intended to honor both Washington and Lincoln, as it now fell between both of their birthdays. Marketers soon jumped at the opportunity to play up three-day weekends with sales, as President's Day bargains were started to be advertised in stores across the country. By the mid-1980s, Washington's birthday was known by many Americans as President's Day. The shift had solidified in the early 2000s, by which time as many as half of the 50 states had changed the holiday's name to President's Day on their official state calendars. And some states, like Alabama, used it to celebrate other days. Thomas Jefferson, who was born in April in Alabama, they also added him to President's Day, of course, taking place in February. However, Washington and Lincoln still remained the two most recognizable leaders, but President's Day is now popularly seen as a day to recognize the lives and achievements of all of America's chief executives. Some lawmakers have objected to this view, arguing that grouping George Washington and Abraham Lincoln together with less successful presidents minimizes their legacy. And I think that's very apt with everything we've seen over the last couple of years to equate somebody like George Washington or Abraham Lincoln with the bumbling idiot that we had in the Oval Office, Joe Biden, is very much the stark contrast. However, congressional measures to restore Washington and Lincoln's individual birthdays were proposed during the early 2000s, but essentially failed to gain any sort of major attention. So that's a little bit of the history of President's Day. It's always interesting when you look at these dates. You know, the inception of this goes all the way back to the 1800, or literally 1800 itself, after the passing of George Washington, to see how that shifts over time, to see what kind of went on at the federal government. You had states recognizing it, changing the name, the Uniform Monday Holiday Act. Some pretty interesting details there. So many folks, most individuals off today, schools closed, federal holiday, President's Day 2025. That is a little bit of the history. Very interesting details there. And again, I'll throw the link to that over at the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, the Daytona 500, that took place yesterday after a long break, a lot of delays. The race started shortly after 2 o'clock, only for it to go into hours of caution due to rain falling in portions of Daytona Beach. And while William Byron won the race for a second straight year, there was a major political figure that was in attendance. Coming off of his Super Bowl visit last weekend, President Donald Trump made his way back to Daytona, which is something he's been at a lot over the last couple of years. During his first term in office, I believe he went to Daytona at least two, if not three times during his first stint in office. It's something that he enjoys. It's something that when you look at the fans of NASCAR, you look at NASCAR as a whole, it very much aligns with the president's agenda, right? You've got this idea within NASCAR. You've got so much patriotism within the sport. It's a logical connection between Trump and what he stands for, and many, not all, but many NASCAR fans. So President Trump made his way to Daytona yesterday, doing what he does, showing up and just... being Donald Trump, driving, or he wasn't driving, of course, but sitting in the Beast, that's his presidential limousine, doing laps around the Daytona 500, a flyover with Air Force One. He actually was leading the pace car a little before 2 o'clock when the race began. And he did give a short interview to Fox Sports, who was producing the NASCAR event. And the president had this to say as he gave these exclusive comments to Fox yesterday.
Well, I'm joined now by the President of the United States. Mr. President, 5 years ago, we were standing in this very spot. What brings you back to the great American race?
Well, I think it's fantastic. It's great for the country. Our country is doing well again, and we have spirit all over the world, this spirit again. We brought it back, and it's been less than 4 weeks. So you'll see what we do in a little period of time. It's going to only get better, but this is very exciting.
You brought your granddaughter. I know some of your other family members are here. You get to take a ride around in the Beast. What is that like?
I'll let you know in about 2 minutes because it's going to be, they're going to be going quite quickly, I understand.
And you just got to meet some of the drivers. Are you going to get on the radio again and talk to them before the start of this?
Them, and I say they have a lot of courage doing this. It's, I see it, and I've been here, and they have a lot of guts, as they would say.
Mr. President, enjoy your time.
Thank you very much.
Great. Mike. Well, I'm joined.
Trump is awesome. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. The guy is just freaking awesome. What a cool thing for him to go and do. And it's not necessarily unique at this point. Now, it was interesting that he was the first president to attend the Super Bowl last week, and that was pretty cool to see. But Trump really knows how to connect with the American people. Trump knows how to talk to and interact with his audience. Trump knows how to resonate with the American people. I mean, it was obvious. You could go over, you could go on Twitter and see all of the comments and all of the things that are being said about Trump being there. It was crazy. And I mean, this was during the broadcast. Here's Clint Boyer talking about it during the broadcast yesterday, how important it is to have somebody like the president there. Take a listen to this. This is somebody who raced at the highest level of the sport. And this is what he's saying. Whether he's a fan of Trump or not, I don't know. It's irrelevant.
It was a great sight to see all the folks in the stands jumping up, grabbing phones, grabbing cameras as Air Force One did a flyby of the Speedway before landing.
You know, we're very fortunate. Kevin, you and I, this sport's given us anything, you know, everything in our lives. Very fortunate to have a sport that somebody as powerful as the President of the United States of America wants to come and be a part of it, be present. It means a lot to the sport of NASCAR and everybody involved.
It does mean a lot, and I've been fortunate to, you know, go to the White House and meet with several presidents, and Donald Trump has been so good to the sport, being and attending events, the Daytona 500 twice now, so it's a great sight to see.
It's a great sight to see, and you can hear the respect from the individuals as they said, you know, this sport has given us everything. These are individuals who their entire lives, their wealth, the success that they've had was based around the sport of NASCAR. And they can understand and respect, even if they disagree with the president. Even if they don't like the president, I'm sure Clint Boyer does. Like he's a Trump guy. But even if they don't, to be able to understand the significance of having somebody like the president of the United States showing up to an event like this is very, very impactful. Now, obviously, the NASCAR, the fans surrounding NASCAR. The whole sport itself is very much, I think it would be safe to assume, many of those individuals, major Trump fans. It was obvious with the Air Force One flyover, the standing ovation from the crowd. You had a whole bunch of drivers jumping out of pit row to run over and shake hands with Trump before the race. I mean, it was obvious the amount of support that they have for Trump. But again, more than anything else, the respect that these individuals have for Trump, for the president being there, is pretty remarkable. And then just one final audio clip for you. This was the message Trump is able to take control of the in-car radio. All of the drivers, of course, chat with their teams, their pit crew and their leaders throughout the race to give them, you know, information and things like that. Trump takes over the radio before the race actually starts and has this to say.
This is your favorite president. I'm a big fan. I am a really big fan of you people that you do this. I don't know, but I just want you to be safe. You're talented people and you're great people and great Americans. Have a good day. Have a lot of fun and I'll see you later.
How cool is that? I was down in Myrtle Beach yesterday when the race started, and even in the bar that I was in, a restaurant that I was in, when Trump showed up on TV, you had everybody in the bar turning their head and looking at what was going on with the president being there. It's so amazing, and I find myself stunned by this. So often, it's remarkable how different things are under Trump compared to where they were under Biden. I mean, I thought I knew how different they were. I thought I fully grasped the difference between the previous guy and this guy. But as it seems like as every day goes on, as we hear from the president, as we see him showing up at things like the Super Bowl, as we see him at things like the NASCAR race, as he's signing executive orders and things of that nature, it's such a compare and contrast to what we had over the last 4 years. A president that surrounded himself with individuals that did not have America's best interests in mind, surrounded himself with friendly media that did not ask any tough questions, a guy that essentially hid away from the American public for a large part of his presidency. I saw a report yesterday. Joe Biden had something like 570 days worth of vacation while he was in the Oval Office, the most in for any president in any modern history. That was what you saw under Biden. And what you're seeing under Trump is, and now we're, what, 4 weeks in to him being in the Oval Office, not a full month yet, but 4 full weeks. It is completely different from what you saw in the past. And it's good. He talks about bringing back American exceptionalism. His catchphrase, his red hat that he was wearing, make America great again. It's not a very complicated message. I don't believe it's a very controversial message. To me, it's a message that's very straightforward. And it's a message that should resonate with every single person in our country. We want a great nation. At least I do. I'm sure most of you listening do. You want a great nation. You want a prosperous nation so that you can provide for your family, so that you can live a prosperous life. And for whatever reason, our society, our polarized political society right now, has pinned people against each other in a way that is very disturbing, and in a way in which I will state is not sustainable long term. The political divides that we have right now, the nasty, vitriolic, hateful things on both sides of the political, I'll note, that we're dealing with right now in our country is very, very detrimental. Now, we've seen some polling over the last couple of weeks that shows that Trump's approval is very high. I'm seeing it in the upper 50s in a couple of polls. Let's hop over to Real Clear Politics and see what they've got popped up over there. I saw something on X over the weekend that showed Trump's approval rating, and it was in the middle or upper 50s. As of right now, Real Clear Politics, this is the overall average of all of these polls, has Trump's current approval at 48.5, which with everything averaging now, unfortunately, a lot of this is approval before he was actually in office. But if you look at it from essentially January 20th onwards, outside of one terrible poll from TIPP that had him at a 42% approval, everything is in the mid-50s. The three most recent polls, Pew Research, Favorability 52, Marquee 54, and Economist YouGov 53, just within the last couple of days. So hopefully Trump is able to, I'll say, heal a portion of America, because we are incredibly divided right now. And it's not good. It's really bad that we are at a period in our society where individuals literally hate, and I don't use that word, I try not to use that word very often, but where individuals hate each other immensely based on their political beliefs. They despise members of their own family. Every holiday that rolls around, there's some stupid article at, you know, Politico or the New York Times or the Huffington Post about how I can't have Thanksgiving this year, I can't have Christmas this year because of my crazy MAGA family and they're a bunch of racist bigots, and I'm just going to sit home by myself and cry with a bottle of wine because my, you know, I've decided that I can't interact with my family because they disagree with me politically. This stuff is insane. It's got to stop. It's got to end. And hopefully Trump is able to restore some of that, you know, just generally being an American and not hating each other based on political beliefs and political standings. If he does nothing else, and he will, it's been 4 weeks, he's been nonstop. But if he does nothing else, hopefully he moves us a little bit closer to that. He's not going to solve the problem. Nobody will. But you want to, like in a football game, you want to move the ball down the field. Even if it's just a couple of yards at a time, You're trying to get to the end zone. And hopefully Trump can help move that ball down the field a little bit to bring the American public back together. It's not good. It's not good at all. So that's going to do it. A President's Day edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thank you so much for being here this morning. We, of course, continue to track a lot of news nationally. Trump's down in Florida today, so we don't have any major press events scheduled. No EO signings, no White House press briefing. However, we will keep an eye on the news of the day and have everything coming up for you tomorrow morning live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow morning on the Nick Craig Show.